Okay. Perek Yud Beis. Right? If you're reading his red tani, it's on page 32, the 12th chapter. Now starts a very key part of Tanya. I mean, all key parts, but a new section, so to speak. So, the Alter Rebbe, again, like I always say, the book is about the Beinoni. The Alter Rebbe explained the two neshamas, the two souls, you understand, he explained the ten components of each soul, then he explained how the Nefesh HaBamis works, Nefesh HaLakis, and in the last 2 weeks, we explained in each chapter Yud and Yud Aleph, 10 and 11, what the true definition of a tzaddik is and what the true definition of a rasha is. And in each one, there's two levels. There's a perfect tzaddik, imperfect tzaddik, perfect rasha, imperfect rasha, and a little bit different, but that's what we did. All this was a lead up, really, to what we're going to start learning now, which is the Beinoni. So what is the Beinoni? So let's just give a little introduction. On the one hand, the Beinoni is someone, as the Alter Rebbe really alluded to, or actually not just alluded, he said it quite clearly in the first perek, that a Beinoni is someone that doesn't do anything wrong. Right? Not in action, not in speech, and not even in thought. Meaning, as we explained last week, we'll see later, the Beinoni is someone that has negative thoughts, but is able to deal with them right away. Okay. On the other hand, in that regard, the Beinoni, on a behavioral level, the Beinoni is really similar to a tzaddik. I'm all talking about true definitions of a tzaddik and a Beinoni, right? Not the borrowed term like we learned about in the first chapter. On the other hand, the Beinoni has not succeeded at all in eradicating the essential klippah within himself, the ra. Right? It's called the Nefesh HaBamis. Nefesh HaBamis is not transformed. Nefesh HaBamis will still struggle for control over the body, just like the Nefesh HaLakis will. And it's still there, right? So in that regard, the Beinoni is similar to a Rasha. That's exactly what the Rasha's position is. The Rasha has not transformed, has not taken control over the bad. This is why it's called the Beinoni. Just wanted to explain the definition, right? A Beinoni normally means, like we say, a middle person, intermediary. So in the borrow, in the legalistic term of Beinoni, you say he's not a tzaddik because he hasn't got majority mitzvahs. He's not a rasha because he has a majority averus. He's somewhere in the middle, like half-half, 50-50, right? Which we explained is not the true definition of a Beinoni. So then why is he called a Beinoni? Right? Why do we have a different name? The Beinoni is because he is, on one level, conceptually, somewhere between a tzaddik and a rasha. He's like a tzaddik on a behavior level, but he's like a rasha because he still has ra, he still has klippa within him. And the klippa is still strong. Okay, that's clear. So the Alter Rebbe now says that this is, as we've been talked about many times, this is now what we're going to explain, because a Beinoni is the she'ifa, it's the aspiration, or should be the aspiration of every Yid. Every Yid should be aspired to become a Beinoni. That is what the book is about. And if you know, by the way, that you know that the Alter Rebbe also wrote a book called Sefer Chal Tzaddikim. But it was burnt.
So it
was burnt, yeah. So we don't know what it is. And even if you knew, Putin would probably wouldn't have that much relevance to us, because it would be only relevant to Tzadikim, right? But, okay. Now, when we look at a Beinoni, if you think about someone who never ever does anything wrong, obviously that sounds like a very high madrega, which we've talked about why Chassidus in general talks about very high levels, which is fine. But the book of Tanya really is to make it easier for us, right? Because if you remember, at the very beginning of Tanya, he started off with a pasuk in his introductory page. He says that Tanya is based on the pasuk called Ki Korov Eilecha Hadavar Ma'od. The Torah is very, very close to you. V'ficha u'bilvavcha la'asaisai. In your mouth, in your heart, to be able to apply it, right? Here's a tiny show. Should be another one somewhere. You sure? Yeah, okay, let's throw it for a second. No, you take it. So page 32, Perek Yud-Beis, right? So b'fichcha lov chal asoyse, in your heart, in your mouth, in your heart, and able to do it. And the very beginning of Tanya, he said that really the whole book is to explain the obvious question. What do you mean, kikurim? It's not that easy. We all know it's not that easy, right? We all know it's not easy to apply Torah and mitzvahs and to live our entire life by Torah and mitzvahs. It's not easy. Why? It's not easy because we have temptation, because we have a nefesh abonus, and because we have those drives within us that are fighting for control over our body, over our personality, and therefore it's not easy, right? Most persons, if you tell them, can you be a person who never does that, very impossible, right? So I guess the question is, like, why is that even a thing? Why is it even an aspiration, right? And the book of Tanya was written to explain how it's kikorev, how it's easy. Now, it doesn't mean it's easy. It means it's, I guess, korev is really, korev is not the word, the translation of the word korev to say easy is probably mistranslation.
Attainable,
accessible, right? In other words, the pathway, the aspiration, the mindset to gain control over our behavior is, for a human being, for a yid specifically, it is an attainable, it is an accessible pathway. Are we going to get to mamash what he's talking about, the Beinoni? Probably not. As we know the famous thing, even Hillel Parashah said, when he started to learn Tanya, he said, halavai, he thought he was a tzaddik, and then he said, halavai Beinoni, I wish I'd be a Beinoni. But at least we can have the mindset of a Beinoni. We can, this is what Tanya really speaks. Now, from Yud Beis and Perek Yud Beis onwards, he explains to us what we have to do for that, right? What is the... that's why he wrote the Tanya. Levi, he says Levi Hete, to explain very well how it's korev, how it's attainable, how it's accessible. And he said at the very beginning of Tanya, "Bederech arucha uketzara," in a long and short way, meaning the way of Chabad Chassidus, the way of Tanya is that it's a long way. There's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of hisbanus, a lot of reflection to do. There's a lot of davening to be done, as we'll soon see. There's a lot of achieving some level of love of Hashem and fear of Hashem, and he's going to explain what that means. And it's a lot of components, right? But it's a different mindset. It's a whole mindset of serving Hashem in a way where our mindset is that what we're fighting for, what we're trying to attain, what we're trying to aspire to, is to gain control completely of for nefesh elokis and to be able to serve Hashem the whole time, even though there's a struggle, right? That's what it is. Again, obviously, it's going to depend on each person's journey as well, which means sometimes people are starting very, very far behind. We're all starting very far behind, right? So when we say it's aspirational to work towards gaining control of our thought, speech, and action, it might not be, even in an aspirational way, it might not be something we could do overnight. But it does push us, at least, in that direction. It pushes us to take on things that are a bit more difficult, to show less interest in worldliness and more interest in godliness, and so on and so forth, yeah? That's the concept. Okay, so that's the introduction. Let's have a look. He says the following. The Habeni, this is the beginning of the parak. The Habeni says, what's the Beinoni? Shelo oilam ein hara goyvro kakach. That the bad in him, now he has bad in him. He's got the nefesh abamis. He's got the klipa, right? So he has that, we call it bad, which means it's not godliness, right? But that ra, that bad, or that evil, that klipa that's in him, is never so strong, lichboish eso irik tana, to conquer the small city, which he made reference two chapters ago. Small city means the person. Lihislabosh beguf, so that klipa can actually enclose itself, embed itself in the body, lehachatiyoy, to make him do an aver. That the Beinoni doesn't have that. The true definition of Beinoni has the ra, but the ra never is able to conquer the irik tana, the small city. I know, what does that mean? It's the same like this. I just want to remind you about something so we get it clear. I mentioned it quickly last week and the week before, but I want to just clarify. There's a concept of each nefesh, meaning the nefesh habamis and the nefesh elokis, have 10 powers, right? The 10 powers are 3 intellectual powers, chacham and das, and the 7 emotions, chesed, gevurah, tiferes, etc., until malchus, right? We also explained that by nefesh elokis, the main driver is the intellectual power, because that's the insight, nefesh elokis. In the animal souls, the other way around, the main driver is the emotional. Okay, but that's raw intellect and raw emotions. But every neshama needs a way to express that. How do you express that emotion? Emotion is an intrinsic feeling. Intellectual is an intrinsic idea. How's it expressed, right? It's a nuanced thing, especially with the first one I'm going to say. So we explained that we have three levushim, three garments. That's machshava, dibur, and maisa. Thought, speech, and action, right? Now, speech and action is very easy to understand, that they separate from the 10 powers, right? So if I have an idea, a seichel, intellectual concepts in my mind, yeah? If I don't speak it, then it's not expressed. If I don't share it with you, I didn't talk about it, right? If I don't do anything about it, I haven't actioned it. So it means that my idea or my emotion has not been expressed in speech and in action. The part that's a bit harder to understand is thought. Because thought is inseparable from what I am, right? You say, if I have an intellectual idea, well, obviously I'm thinking about it. It's actually not true. The two things, it's difficult to understand, but the two things are actually separable. In other words, my raw intellect and my thinking about the idea are two separate things. They bound up, they become one, but they are two separate things. The idea is the intrinsic intellectual concept that I have the ability to create or to understand or to process. The thought is the mechanism through which I process it. You understand? So thought is not intellect.
Thought's more like a bina thing, because you have to do something with it.
Not bina, bina is part of intellect.
Not a building thing.
Not really an expression thing. It's a way it expresses itself, but to myself. Is the ability to think, but it's not thinking and thought, it's the ability to have an idea. So the ability to understand, in other words, like this, that's why it's hard to understand it, because it's not, they have to come together, but nevertheless they are different. What I'm trying to say is, if I have a temptation suddenly, it's right, or an idea, you know, I'm going to go next door and rob the store, God forbid, right? So the idea is the idea to rob the store. It's not the I think about it is the way I express that idea. But they actually, in theory, are two separate things. Which is why the Beinoni, the Beinoni doesn't express any bad in his three garments, thought, speech, and action. In thought, it's a little bit different, because in thought, he has the initial thought, but he doesn't process it, he doesn't maintain it. He can't not have the initial thought, because as soon as I have an idea, it's going to come into my thought, obviously. I can block it from coming into my speech altogether. I can block it from coming into action altogether. But I can't block it from initially coming into my thought, because they are sort of inseparable, but they're two separate things. But I can kick the idea out of my thought if I want to.
But if you entertain the thought, it's actually an avera.
It's actually a non-service of God. And the Beinoni doesn't serve God.
Okay, but it's not considered an avera yet.
Well, that's the thing. See, what we're going to learn is like this, right? As we've learned already. When we say an avera, we talk about the Beinoni never doing something wrong. I mean, we'll come to in a second. Okay, let me say that. When we say the Beinoni not doing something wrong, it doesn't only mean he doesn't do averus. It doesn't only mean that he keeps Shulchan Aruch, which, by the way, is an incredible achievement, right? To keep the whole Shulchan Aruch is an incredible achievement. But that's not enough for a Beinoni, a true Beinoni. Because serving Hashem means we have to serve Hashem in everything we do. So, for example, a Beinoni also won't eat excessively, won't eat indulgently, right? And he also won't entertain thoughts. Now, some thoughts, you ask about avera. Some thoughts are outright avera. So if a person thinks promiscuous thought, for example, if he entertains them, that's an avera. The Torah says it's an avera. If you think thoughts of avodah zarah, that's an avera. We said every day in Shema, do not follow your eyes and your heart and your eyes. Well, part of that, the Rambam says, is processing heretical thoughts, which is why, according to the Rambam, it's actually forbidden to read idol worship literature. Right? Do you know that? It's actually an interesting thing, right? Unless the only time that's mutter is for a person needs to do it, then he has to get a certain special hetter from a rabbi to do it. If a person needs to do it in order to know how to fight it, right? Like, it's actually forbidden to read the New Testament, for example, right? There are rabbis that have done that because their whole mission is fighting missionary or whatever. Okay, but I'm saying or any other. Apicursus, radical thoughts. But, okay, so those thoughts are actually an avera. But there are other thoughts, for example, a person is wasting time, he's just entertaining, I don't know, idle thoughts, right? The Beinoni wouldn't do that, because everything he does is serve Hashem. Might be tempted to do that, but again, we're going to talk, whenever we talk Beinoni, we're going to talk Beinoni in absolute terms, okay? Because that's what we're learning the definition of. But the idea is that you're in control of your thought, speech, and action. But with thought, it's a bit different to speech and action, as we'll learn, because thought, the initial thought will always be there.
So when you're plotting, God forbid, to rob the store next door, that's just an absence of kedusha. It's not actually an avera.
Right, so exactly. But nevertheless, well, not only absolute vainly, every youth should push that thought out of their mind right away. Right? I'm bringing that example to show that we can relate to that, right? We can relate that if you have a thought to go and steal something from a store, you shouldn't entertain that thought, even as a thought. But it'll come into our mind if that's what we're holding, if that's what the Nefesh HaBam is able to do, to push it into our mind, it will. And initially it'll be in our thought because you can't separate thought from ideas, although they are separate. But we get, because they're separate, the thought might remain in the recesses of our mind, but we have the power to push it out of our thought. Okay. Let's see how he says it inside. So he says like this. So what does that mean that he never does Aveir? What does he mean he doesn't let the Nefesh HaBam just conquer the small city? He says it means the following. It means that the three garments of the Nefesh HaBamis, not the 10 components, the three garments of the Nefesh HaBamis, which is thought, speech, and actions, which come from Klippa, the world of Klippa, they never overpower the Nefesh HaLakis. They're never able to win over the Nefesh HaLakis, right? To come into our body, b'moyach in our brain, b'peh in our mouth, b'shara machi vorim, or the other 248 limbs that we have, right? By the Rosh, it is. The person who isn't a Benyani has the thought, I'm gonna eat something wrong, I'm gonna do something wrong, and then it actually does it. So in other words, it comes into our speech, or into our thoughts, or into our action, which means now our levushim, our garments, won over the Nefesh HaLakis. But the Benyani, the thought is there, not like a tzaddik. The thought is there. The temptation is there, but it never wins. Therefore, it never comes into the three garments. The three garments never win the war. That's what it means. Lehachtiyom, to make the person sin. Uletamom, or to make them impure. Chas v'shalom. Now, he uses those two expressions very carefully. To make them sin and to make them impure. Because like I said before, the Benyani is not just someone who never does an istur. He doesn't do a prohibition. The Benyani is someone that never becomes impure either. In other words, he serves Hashem all the time. Because ultimately, one of the mitzvahs of the Torah, as we know, I'll give you an example of this. One of the mitzvahs of the Torah is in Parshas Kedoshim, we say, Kadesh Atzmei B'Mutalach, that you have to sanctify ourselves in things that are permissible, right? The Ramban, the famous Ramban, where the Torah says, you shall be holy, and the Mefarshim asks, what kind of mitzvah is this to be holy? What does it mean? How do I be holy, right? There are many different interpretations, but right, there's a mitzvah of the Torah to be holy, right? So how do I be holy? Like, what do you do to be holy? I understand the mitzvah put on tefillin, I get that, light Shabbos candles, right? But what do I need to do? So the Ramban says, or the Chazal say, and the Ramban explains it, Kaddish Atzem Mutalo, you've got to be sanctify yourselves even in things which are not Averis. For example, like food, right? So we can, like the Ramban says, a famous Lashon, it's a very, very sharp expression. He says a person can be a novel birushus haTorah. It can be a novel means like a low life, with the permission of the Torah. That's what it means. Don't be a novel birushus haTorah. What does that mean? It means you can go to you can have the best hechsher and it can have three hechsherim on it. And it could be chol of Yisrael and glat kosher and everything like that. But you being a novel, you just I'm a glutton. That's all right. Best hechsher, but it's a glutton, right? And that's what the Torah says. That's not being holy, right? So ultimately, therefore, if a person does a dvar heter, if a person does something that's mutter, but he's being a novel, he's being a coarse materialistic person, ultimately that's also against the Torah. It's not like, we said it's a bein, only not just do something isur. Ultimately, that it becomes an isur as well, right? Like we learned before, it comes down into the, it was klipas noiga, but it descends into the klipas, in the complete klipa, right? As we learned before. So therefore, what does happen with the Benyani? He says, he continues, Rak shloisha levushei nefesh alakis. But the three garments of the nefesh alakis, heim levadom mislapshim beguf. They are the only levushim. In other words, like this. The nefesh habamis' 10 powers is still there. The nefesh alakis' 10 powers are still there. It hasn't transformed anything. Right? The raw urge of the nefesh habamis and the raw urge of the nefesh alakis is there. And therefore, there's still a battle. But there's only one set of levushim. There's only one set of garments. And that is, he says, the three levushim of the nefesh HaLakis, heim levadom mislap shim beguf. They alone are able to enter the body. Shei machshava, dibur, umaisa, which they are the thought, speech, and action shel nefesh, of mitzvot, shel tayag mitzvot haTorah, of the of the mitzvahs of the Torah, right? The 613 mitzvahs of the Torah. Right? Therefore, he says, therefore he says, but the avar aveira miyom, now I have to understand this next expression, it's a very, very interesting expression. He says, the avar aveira miyomav, the Benyani never did an avera, the gam lo yavar lo oilam, and they never will do an avera. Now both those expressions are problematic. Right? What do you mean, he never did an avera, never will do an avera? What does that mean? First of all, you say if a person never did an avera, then that's it. A person comes bar and bas mitzvah, did one avera, that's it. He's now lost hope of ever being a Benyani, ever. Right? And that's not true. Because later on, the Alter Rebbe has an expression where he says that a person has the power to be a Beinoni, b'chol eis or b'chol shah. At any moment, a person can become a Beinoni. So what does it mean, never did an Avera? Right? Because later on, he's going to give us a whole strategy of how, through positive thinking and through sharp thinking and through cheshbon nefesh and through tshuva and through all sorts of things, he's going to give us a whole strategy of how we get the nefesh of Amos under control. Meaning at least in a solution, right? Which means we're talking about a person that up to now doesn't have it under control. He's not talking about a 10-year-old that's learning Tanya. We're talking about a 25-year-old that's learning Tanya or an adult learning Tanya, right? So obviously it doesn't mean that. And also, what does it mean you never will do an aver? How can you ever guarantee a person will never do an aver? You know, one of the fundamentals of Judaism is that a person has free choice. The Chazal tell us even about Yochanan Kohen Gadol. Right? This is not common, but there was a person called Yochanan Kohen Gadol. He was a Kohen Gadol, which means he was a big tzaddik, I mean, a big person, right? A holy person. For 80 years. He was a Kohen Gadol for 80 years. Now, you don't get to become a Kohen Gadol for 80 years if you're not special. They were in the second base of Mikdash, they were Kohanim Gedolim, they weren't so good, but they didn't last more than a year, because when they went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, they went to the Holy of Holies in Yom Kippur, they didn't last very long, right? Because the holiness was too strong for them, they weren't a vessel for it. That's why in the second base of Mikdash, which stood for 420 years, there were 300 Kohanim Gedolim, because most of them didn't last more than 1 year, right? But Yochanan Kohen Gadol did. Yochanan Kohen Gadol lasted 80 years. So obviously, every time he went to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, he was okay. And after 80 years, he became a tzaduki, he became a heretic. That's not common. The Gemara also tells us about Achir in the Masechet Chagiga. There was a great tzaddik called Achir. I've mentioned him many times. He was the Rebbe, he was the teacher of Rebbe Meir, and he was a great person. And he became an Apikurus, right? Why? Because in Pirkei Avos it says, "While tamin atzmecho ad yoy moisach," a person should never, it's a lesson for us, we should never ever trust ourselves until the day we die. Right, we're never spiritually secure, by the way, unless you're a perfect tzaddik, you've completely eradicated nefesh habamis. Okay, that's something else. But regular most people, we're never guaranteed. Yeah, it's less probable. The more we make Yiddishkeit part of who we are, the more we make it part of our DNA. The more we become God-centered, the more we get used to that. Our struggle shifts. The goalpost shifts. Okay, so we always have some struggle, but I mean, you know, you cannot compare our struggles to the one of Isha the Masmi that I mentioned last week, right? Different people, but I don't think Richard Amaspian had a big struggle passing a pizza store whether he should guzzle pizza or not. That wasn't his world. He lived in a different. But he still had a struggle because he still had nefesh habamis. But the fact is, the struggle is still there, so you can never trust a person. So therefore, the question is, what does it mean that the Alter Rebbe says that a Benyani never understand? He says a Benyani is someone who's in control of his thought, speech, and action. But what does it mean when he says that a Benyani never did an aver, never will do an aver? What does that mean? That's impossible to know that. Both those expressions don't make sense. And therefore, the Mefarshim explain that it means that at this moment, it's like that. In other words, a person can become a Beinoni and a person can become, he can un-Beinoni himself. Right? Or he could have not been a Beinoni and become a Beinoni. It means like this, that the Beinoni is so in control of his thought, speech, and action that right now he's in a situation. First of all, for his past, he's completely left it and did tshuva. And therefore, as we say, like a person does tshuva, those averas are eradicated, and therefore it's like he never did an avera. And he's so focused and he's so filled with love of Hashem and he's so in control of his machshava, dibura, maisa, that in this situation, given his mindset in this moment, he will never do an avera. However, we know that mindset could change because it's a struggle. That's what it means. Right? There's not something new, it's not something that's a chiddush of the Alter Rebbe, but the Rambam already says it. The Rambam says, when he talks about how a person does tshuva, for any aveira, right? In the laws of Yom Kippur, we have a mitzvah, tshuva, Yom Kippur especially, right? I mean, all year round, but Yom Kippur especially. And often around Yom Kippur, we learn the laws of tshuva for the Rambam to know what tshuva means, right? And especially if we have something specific that we, you know, we fell through, or we failed in, or we upset, we want to do proper tshuva. The Rambam says, how do you do proper tshuva? He says, you have to do such a tshuva, you have to regret it aveira so much, and you have to resolve to such an extent that you don't want to do it again. The Rambam says the interesting lashon. He says, "Ad asher yoid olav ta'alumo isliboy," until Hashem, who knows the secrets of your heart, can testify about you that you're never going to do it again. Same question. How can the Rambam say such a thing? What do you mean Hashem testifies never do it again? Hashem gave us free choice, and He's not taking away the free choice anytime soon, right? But it means Hashem can see in your inner recesses of your heart, not just what you look like. You can might cry crocodile tears. That's not what it's about. It's about what you really feel. And Hashem could see that what you really feel in this moment, what you really feel is you're never going to do it again. That could change. But right now, that's your situation. So this is what he means. He means that the Beinoni says, there's a person that in this situation, he has mastered the art of controlling his nefesh habamish to such an extent, not to transform and not to eradicate it, but to make sure that it's not expressed through thought, speech, and action. And therefore, right now is in the, or right in this process, or in this month, or in this routine that he's currently in, he is never done aver, never will do aver.
You have to do tshuva to get to that point.
Yes, everyone has to do tshuva. Tshuva is a thing we all do. I mean, yeah, of course, part of the avoid that every Yiddish tshuva. Sorry.
It's not just you in that moment.
No. Of course, the proper tshuva. It's a process. We're not just talking about right. You know, it's a.
So to get to that point in time where you potentially.
Yeah, but it's much more than just doing tshuva. You actually have to get in complete control of your machshava, dibur, and maisa. I think that's harder than tshuva. But they come together, right? I'll tell you a cute little story. So there was a... there's a guy, I don't know him, but in this book, it quotes him as Rabbi Yosef Denberg. But he learned, when he was 12 years old, he learned by the... There was a famous mashpia in France called Rabbi Nissen Nemenov. Nissen Nemenov was a very, very... He was a very homogeneous. He was a Yid. I heard my father didn't learn by him. My father knew him. He used to tell stories. He's a big chassid of the previous Rebbe and the Rebbe. And he used to daven every day for a few hours. And he would teach. And he was the whole day busy with Avodas Hashem. He used to talk a lot about Kabbalah Sir, about discipline. This was his big thing. And apparently the previous Rebbe said about him, I think it was the previous Rebbe, previous Rebbe said about him that he's a Beinoni of Tanya. Very few people that always said about him is Beinoni of Tanya, but he actually is a Beinoni of Tanya. He reached the true Beinoni of Tanya. So he says that Rabbi used to travel sometimes with different things. I think he'll come to America or Montreal, I'm not sure. He would stay in this person's house. And among the kids of the house, there was a roster. Every time there would be a different kid that would stay in the room, a different boy, I guess, that would stay in the room with Remissen to help him out or whatever the case is. So he says, one time my turn came. So I thought, that's great. That means it gives me a bit of an opportunity to speak to Remissen and to ask him a question. So he said, I asked him, so he said, what I do was, I was a Chassidish kid and I was learning Tanya. And I turned to Remissen and I said, you think in our generation it's possible to be a Beinoni? Like, I mean, well, Beinoni, you learn about a Beinoni, you think it's possible? So Rissen turned to him and he said like this, tell me, he says, can you not do anything wrong for 1 minute? He said, yeah, I could. He says, for sure. He says, can you for 1 minute not say anything wrong? He said, yeah. And he said, you think that even for the 1 minute you can protect yourself not having bad thoughts? He said, yeah, I think I can do that. So he said, okay, so it's 1 minute, it's one more minute, it's one more minute, one more minute, that's all it is. I mean, easier said than done. But it's an interesting perspective. You're saying that you have to. This is told long before modern mindfulness, right? In other words, it. Yeah, you're asking a question, which is a good. It's a good idea to think about it this way. You ask that question, can I be a Bayani? What, for the next, I'll live another, I don't know how many years, whatever. Each person at their age can make a cheshbon until 120, how many years they can live. You think, boy, for the next 60 years, I'm not going to do anything wrong. Don't think of it like that. Think about right now. One more minute. That's a cute little story. Anyway, okay. So the Altareba continues and he says, Nikra Olav Shame Rasha. And therefore, because the Benyani is never did anything wrong and never will do anything wrong in the current matzav that he is, therefore he's never called a Rasha. Afilu Shoach has even one moment, Verega Echod, even 1 hour, 1 moment, called Yom of all of his lives, right? That's a Benyani. Ach, he says, however, important to understand. Mahus v'atzvus nefesh alakis. This is the point now. However, this is the garments of the nefesh abayimis. But let's understand that by a bainly, the essence of the nefesh alakis, shem l'chesser b'chinesel, which are the 10 levels, the 10 components, right? Loi lohen levadon. They are not the only ones that have hamelucha v'hamemshala b'yiktana. They're not the only ones that have complete control in the small city, in the human being. That's the difference between Bani and Tzaddik. Yeah? In other words, the Nefesh of the Kids has ultimate control. Yes. Right? But Nefesh of the Kids has not exclusively conquered the person. Because we learned before that the two souls struggle with each other to conquer the person. The Nefesh of the Kids and the Nefesh of Bams, right? Okay. But by the Bainli, that doesn't happen. The Bainli's Nefesh Abamis is still there. However, now he continues a very interesting thing. He says, Ki im be'itim mezumanim. With the Bainli, there are times that he has fully conquered the Nefesh Abamis. Kamoi b'shas kriya shema b'tfila. Like the times of Shema and Shemoneh Esrei. Now this will be elaborated on later, but I'll explain to you what this is talking about. Part of the key to be a Bayani is proper davening. This is something that comes later, right? Because it appears, what the Altareb explains, that in order to, in other words, like this, first of all, what does that mean? Okay, no, let me just go another line and say it, and I'll explain. Shehu shas moichin de gadlus lemaila. Because when a person davens, and davens properly, or say Shema properly, right? It's a time of great revelation above, and it's called Moichen the Gadlus. I'm not getting into now. I mean, it's like a broadening of the brain, and there's a sort of an insight that flows during times, holy times like davening and learning, or davening particularly, right? That is strong, and the energy is present and works during davening, right? Why? Because what is davening? First of all, why and what does it mean? And why does it have to be like that? So there's three questions I want to address. So the Bayani gets to a point through davening that taka, there's not even a struggle. Almost like a tzaddik. But that's not a constant state of being, but that's what happens during davening, right? First of all, how does he get to that? And second of all, what does that mean if afterwards there is a struggle? So obviously Nefesh Bamish wasn't transformed. And third of all, why is that necessary? So it's like this. And again, by the way, like I keep on saying, I'll probably repeat it every time I learn Tanya 16 times, right? Even though none of us are going to get to this, but it's important because if we learn about this, it will change our davening. Because davening has an effect on every person. Not, we shouldn't fool ourselves, not that we're going to reach the madrigas that we're talking about here, right? Some people think if we read this prayer of Tanya and we're davening like Rav Nissen Nemenov, we're not davening like Rav Nissen Nemenov, or like Ishu the Masmid. None of us. I'm sorry to... I don't mean to judge anyone, but my fair guess is that no one in this room is going to get the madrigal of davening, not of Rabbi Avram Parij, and not Mrs. Nemanov, not Shabbat Master, all these big people who are famous for their davening, right? And I'll tell you something interesting. The Rebbe Rashab, who made the yeshiva of Tom Chetz Mimim, right? Tom Chetz Mimim was three rebbes ago, right? He made the Lubavitch yeshiva in the city of Lubavitch called Tom Chetz Mimim. And at the beginning, it was a very selective yeshiva. He only took certain bachurim. He wanted to establish it very, very strongly. Up until then, there wasn't a formal Lubavitch yeshiva. I mean, people used to come to the city of Lubavitch, they used to learn Chassidus, but there wasn't a yeshiva where they learned the revealed part of Torah and Chassidus. And there was a tremendous emphasis on davening. He took some really heavy-duty people and trained them, like, really, really well. Right? So I tell a story that in... I'll get to the three questions in a minute. But I tell a story like this. I heard this from my father-in-law many times. There was a time that in Lubavitch there were 300 bochrim, the 300 students in the yeshiva. All used to daven, there was focus on davening, so the minyan used to take place every morning, and there were 300 bochrim that were very dumb, very nasty. But there were like 30 bochrim who would daven beyond the minyan. They would actually have permission, they would go to a separate room, and they would continue davening for hours. In the month of Elul, that number raised, and many of the bochrim used to daven more like 100 out of the 300. Okay. One time, it was after the minyan had finished, and there was a whole group of bochrim davening in the special room, and they were very steeped in their service of Hashem. There was like 30 of them, and the Rebbe Rashab walked in. And most of them noticed that the Rebbe Rashab walked in, and they froze. Like, Rashab walked in, so they stopped davening. There were only two bochrim who didn't. I've forgotten the second one, but the first one's name was David Horodoka. David Horodoka was a very, very great tzaddik. And probably shouldn't call him a tzaddik, because he wouldn't like me calling him that. But he was probably a beinoni, right? And his davening was fire. It was absolutely fire, right? So much so that he was completely in a different world than he was davening, and he didn't even notice that the Rebbe Rashab walked in. And the Rebbe Rashab said that for those two bochrim who didn't notice that he came in, it was worth the whole yeshiva, paid off all the expenses, the rest is all profit. Those two bochrim, that's it. For that, expenses covered, just for those two bochrim, right? What was going on with Davin? By the way, that same Rebbe David Horodoka, when he was on his business, when he was on his deathbed, he was very close to his patira. Someone walked over to him and said to him, "Nu Reb David, the great Avas Hashem, did you reach the level of Avas Hashem, of loving Hashem, the true level of loving Hashem?" So it was very hard for him to deny it, but he didn't want to agree with it either. Because Hasidim, as I said, never took themselves seriously. He didn't want to say, "Yes, I." You see, because they thought nothing of themselves, right? But he couldn't deny it really, so he said, "Nu. A kitzel gitan," he says, "a little tickle maybe. Like a little bit maybe." Anyway, but he did, right? Why? Because what is davening? And Al-Tareb is going to elaborate on this later. And this is, we'll see why it's an important part of the Bengali in a second. Davening is, the Gemara says, how do we know what davening is? Davening has a halachic definition and a conceptual definition. So the halachic definition of davening, when I say davening, I mean the Shmona Esra, the Amidah, is bakosha srochav, is asking Hashem your needs, like, right? But the Gemara doesn't really say that. The Gemara says it, of course, and that's the Rambam's definition of a davening also. And you have to daven, and you should understand what you need and daven for it. But the process of davening, the idea of davening, the essence of davening is something completely different, which includes not the Shemoneh Esrei, includes everything up to leading up to the Shemoneh Esrei, which is that the Gemara says, how do we know you have to daven? The Gemara says, ul'avdoi b'chol levavchem, you have to serve Hashem with all your heart. Says the Gemara, a zehu avoidu shabalev. What is a heart service? How do you serve Hashem with your heart? Davening. Davening is a time to emotionally connect to Hashem. Right? So davening is the time where we are supposed to connect to this concept of Avas Hashem, loving God. Loving God doesn't just mean, by the way, yeah, if you ask every year, do you love God? Of course I love God. I mean, he keeps me alive. He does good things for me. He's a good friend of mine. That's not called loving Hashem. Loving Hashem means like a romance. To love Hashem, to feel love of Hashem, right? That's a very difficult thing to feel. Later on, he's going to talk about different levels of love Hashem and how a regular person can achieve that. But the true idea of loving Hashem is huge. And where do you reach that? You reach that during davening. Preparation for davening, thinking about Hashem, thinking about the words, thinking about the greatness of Hashem. If you look at the structure of davening, there's a whole bunch of sections where we praise Hashem, where we talk about the malachim praising Hashem. And then eventually we get to Shema Yisrael, where we really connect this idea there's only one real reality, Hashem Echad. And then we say, V'haftas Hashem alakecha, you should love Hashem your God, right? Doesn't just fall to davening in that place randomly. It's there for a reason. It's a build-up, right? Now, someone like Rabbi David Horodoka or Rabbi Nissen Eminov, who real Benin Neftanya, when they daven, they connect it to love of Hashem. The Chovas HaLevavos says, right? The Chovas HaLevavos says, he says, fire and water can't coexist, as we know, right? So too, when a person is fired up with loving Hashem, like in davening, Nefesh HaBamis can't rear its head, can't cool it off.
So you're animated by your holy soul at that point?
Yeah, completely. Right? and you have a fiery love of Hashem, when you have a fiery love of Hashem which burns during davening, then not only there's no expression of machshava dibur ha'mais in Nefesh HaBamis, there's no problem, there's no threat in Nefesh HaBamis.
We get distracted.
Of course we do, of course. Even if we don't get distracted, we're not going to reach this level. But I'm just saying, this is the Beinoni, right? The ultimate Beinoni, right? So what's actually happening? So at that point, the Beinoni is like a tzaddik. Now, what does that mean? What's going to happen an hour after davening when it cools down? It's going to be a Beinoni. So what happened to Nefesh HaBamis? Nefesh HaBamis wasn't eradicated. It wasn't transformed. So the pshat is, it's like anethetized. Right? It's anethetized. If I'm an aggressive person, I pose a threat to people around me. But if I'm under anesthetic, I don't pose a threat. Has the threat gone away? No. That's the motion, right? If I'm anethetized, I'm no threat. But tomorrow, I'm not going to be anethetized anymore, so I'm going to be a threat again. It's the same thing. The Beinoni has moments like a tzaddik where the Nefesh HaBamis hasn't disappeared, but for functionality purposes, for all intents and purposes, it is like a tzaddik. It doesn't pose any threat anymore. There's no struggle. Once it gets that burning fire of love of Hashem, there's no struggle anymore. That's only why it's while it's happening. By a tzaddik, it's constant because it's Nefesh HaBamis is now transformed. But by Beinoni, it's not. Okay. So that's what it means. So that's how it happens, and that's what it means. The question is, why is that necessary to bring in here? Why is that important to know? And the answer is following. That the only way that a Beinoni can overcome the struggle, right? The only way, ideally, for the Beinoni to overcome the struggle the rest of the day is by having that tzaddik moment during davening. You know, as during davening, you reach that lovens that fuels the determination, it fuels the ability to be in control later on. As we'll see, because part of that is also whole intellectual process. The fire of love, as we explained, in love of the animal soul, you don't need a lot of intellect to fuel the love. You just have the love. That's instinctive, because it's an animalistic love. But in the Nefesh HaLakish, the love is completely fueled by the brain. And as we'll see in a second, the Beinoni only works because the brain rules the heart. And therefore that brain has to become very, very, very strong. Right? So he says that davening is called the Shas Moichen the Gadlus Lemaila. The Gam Lemat, and also down here, Ishas HaKoshe L'chol Adam. It's also an opportune time. Davening is a very special time that one has the ability on some level to reach that level of Avos Hashem.
So the love of Hashem that you talk about before, that could come from the Nefesh HaBamis.
No.
Because the Nefesh HaBamis has no capacity to...
By a tzaddik it has. It can be channeled. But Beinoni too, in some way, and a little bit can be channeled, but not in its ultimate level. So in absolute terms, no. Yeah, but that's not real love Hashem. No, but that's actually not real love Hashem. That's not I'm saying it's not love Hashem we're talking about with Avinu. You love Hashem because you love Hashem, because he's the only thing. He's the only reality, that's why. And I'm nothing. And I'm just part of his reality. That's how real love Hashem comes about, right? Avarachala tefillah, but after davening he says, Bistalkas HaMoich and the Galas and Sombaruchu, when that great revelation of broadening the brain goes away, Hararach Choyzev and Nerbuchal Lasmoli. Then the bad comes back in the left ventricle with the Nefesh HaBamis. When he has the struggle of having some passion and some desire for the pleasures of this world. During davening, it's not even a question. Nothing exists, right? Now again, are we going to reach this level? No, but it doesn't mean that we don't put what this is supposed to be, and not this, and lots of other Tanya and many other books of Hasidus. Part of Chassidus, part of the process of serving Hashem and making ourselves God-centered, is an emphasis on davening, without a question. And kavanah in davening. Now, every person that can mean something different, right? So, in other words, what we learn from here is the importance of avodah satfilah, the importance of davening properly. For some people, that just might mean one paragraph concentrating for 60 seconds. Doesn't matter. But the davening has an effect on our day. There's no question. Great davening of the Beinoni has a great impact on the day. But actually, this is In the aspirational Beinoni, in all of us, all these things are still true. The way we daven will affect our aspiration the rest of the day. So it is important. Davening is important, right? So he says like this. So the rest of the day, he will come back, right? He will come back, the Nefesh HaBamis will make a comeback, and the Nefesh HaBamis will introduce the struggle and will be a threat. And will introduce some struggle. each person according to their journey. Even a big baby, there'll be some struggle to say the wrong thing, to do the wrong thing, to eat the wrong thing, whatever the case is, right? However, by the Bainani, what happens is, and because of what happened during davening, when there is the struggle, because the Nefesh HaBamis has a say, but doesn't have the only say, with the Bainani, the Nefesh HaBamis is never able to actually execute that desire. To actually go into the limbs of the body, but in action, dibur, speech, machshava, or in thought, to entertain and sustain the thoughts of betanuga el mazah, the pleasure of this world, he might have a fleeting thought, you know, it'd be good to eat more indulgently now, but he never makes it past that initial thought. The Nefesh HaBamis is not able to get the person then to. Okay, so where am I gonna buy that ice cream, or how am I gonna do that avera, whatever the case is? Why not? See, now he says the punchline of Tanya almost. You know why? Ki hamoyach shalit al halev. Because the brain can control the heart, is part of the natural nature of the person. A person is created that the brain can control the heart. Which, by the way, is a natural thing for all people. But what it means to the Beinoni is that what the brain tells the Beinoni, which is the Nefesh HaLakis, obviously, the Nefesh HaLakis headquarters in the brain, ultimately, we have the ability for what the brain is telling us from our Nefesh HaLakis, we have control to control what the heart of the Nefesh HaBamis is telling us. Right, so brain controlling the heart means Nefesh HaBamis expresses itself through the heart initially, that's the headquarters, right? The impulsivity, the instinctiveness of Nefesh HaBamis is in the heart. So that initial fire of Nefesh HaBamis that says, okay, it's time to go and do something that's not godliness, the Nefesh won't be able to be expressed because the brain controls the heart, and the brain is what Nefesh HaLakis is telling the Beinoni. And the fired up brain, and the love of Hashem, and so on and so forth, right? This is one of the fundamentals of Tanya. It's going to come up quite a bit in the next few chapters. This idea of Moyach Shalit al Alev, the brain controlling the heart. And this is something we have to tell ourselves the whole time. That at the end of the day, we have a choice. And the choice, we have a choice to do the right thing. Why? Temptation might be very strong, but temptation is coming from the heart. It's an instinctive Nefesh HaBamis heart expression. And we have the capability to control ourselves. It might be hard. Might be disciplined, and the next chapter of Tanya is going to explain how you make it a bit easier with love of Hashem and the leading love of Hashem and all sorts of other things, but that's what it is, right? I'll just tell you a nice little story, a famous story, but about a person, a chassid of the Alter Rebbe called Moshe Meislish of Vilna. And he said that the Aleph base of Tanya, the core of Tanya, saved his life. What happened? So I don't know if you know this, there was he was a big chassid of Alter Rebbe, but he was a very intelligent person, and he came to Alter Rebbe later. He had learned all kinds of languages, and he was a very skilled person. And you know, there was a war between Russia and France. And I don't know if you know the history, I think I mentioned before, there was a big machlokes between the tzaddikim, of who's better to win. Certain tzaddikim in Russia that actually wanted France to win. Napoleon. It was Napoleon for Russia. Because it would bring greater physical comfort to the Jewish people of Russia. Alter Rebbe felt that's not the time is not right. What's going to happen is, which later on happened actually, but not in the time of Alter Rebbe, but what's going to happen is, if France wins, the freedom of France is going to bring with it heresy and shedding the yoke of religion, and it's going to be spiritually very bad, right, for the Jewish people. Even though he knew it was tough in Russia, but he felt at the time that's how it has to remain. Because it was under the Tsar wasn't a great friend or anything, but so the Alter Rebbe, spiritually and physically, strategically, did everything to make sure that Russia should win, and Russia actually won it then, right? One of the things was, he took this Moshe Meislish, and Alter Rebbe actually helped the government of Russia at the time to win the war. This Moshe Meislish, he sent him in to France to be a spy for the Russians. He was a very, very skilled person. And he managed to penetrate quite high levels of military levels over there. And one day he was sitting in a room with some big machas and they were looking at maps. So he was getting intelligence basically, right? And suddenly the door burst in and Napoleon came in. And Napoleon says, there's a spy in this room. Everyone got really big. Everyone denied it, of course. He said, I'm going to find out who it is. And he decided he's going to go and put his ear to the hearts of every person, because someone who's really scared, you know, the heart beats very, very strong, right? And he passed through Moshe Meizlish, and nothing happened. They asked Moshe Meizlish, how's that possible? He said, because ever since he became a chassid al Rebbe, he trained himself, Moyach Shalt al Alev, that the mind rules the heart. And it came to such a point that he was able to control himself not to be scared, not that his heart shouldn't beat. And that's how he saved himself from that. He said it saved his life. Even though that's not what it's meant in Al-Tanya. Tanya is meant about serving Hashem, that the mind's messages can control the heart's temptations. But because he got used to that, he was in full control of his heart, and therefore it saved his. While we're on that story, I'll just tell you a quick little funny story. The Alter Rebbe among his colleagues, you know, the Alter Rebbe was one of the Talmidim of the Mizritcha Magid. But he came from a different part. He was more from Russia, from Lithuania. And although today we call Litvaks, is normally a term that we use for non-Hasidim, but actually the Alter Rebbe, who was the father of Chassidus Chabad, was actually among his peers, was called the Litvak. So one of the Rebbes that held that France should win was the Kozhentse Magid, a big tzaddik. And him and the Alter Rebbe both saw in heaven that when it comes to Rosh Hashanah, before the war was going to end, I don't know what these things mean. I'm just telling the story the way it is, but obviously they mean big things which we have no idea of. But they saw that whichever side is going to blow shofar the first, it's going to be the first blow shofar on Shana morning, he's going to prevail. He's going to prevail. His side will win. So the Kozhentse Magid got up very early, and the crack of dawn, he started shachris, and he said he could have him quicker that day. So he should be able to get there. He had a minion with him. He was able to get to the shofar as quick as possible, so he should beat the Alter Rebbe. What did the Alter Rebbe do? He got up in the morning, took a shofar, and he blew before davening. So the Kozhentse Magid heard about it. He said, "The Litvak chat miyat." Anyway, it's a story. I don't know what the story means, but it's a cute story. All right. Now, this is, he introduces this idea of the brain controlling the heart. And this is what we're going to go into next. And this is the second part of the chapter, which we'll go into next week in Rosh Hashanah. Okay? Thank you. Okay? Thank you. Okay? Thank you. Okay? Thank you. Okay?